Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
The following is a production of the Emerson News Network.
This is it.
Seven four, 505B.
What wing?
Maximum wing, block 9.
Standard release.
Parole 3 out of 5. Good behavior.
Give me a minute. One Timex digital watch broken. One unused prophylactic. One soiled. Boots black. Belt black. One black suit jacket. One pair of black suit pants. One hat, black. One pair of sunglasses, $23.07. Sign here.
Minutes after the hour of 1, and this the month of June in the year of our Lord 2011. Thank you for coming by and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for joining us on this Thursday. It is June 9th, 2011. Welcome to day 12. If you would like to be part of the program today, you can do that via the telephone if you'd like. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. You know, we've been doing this show for like a year, and the phone number's never changed. It's been the same since the first day, and yet I, like one out of every 3 days, I just forget what it is. I don't know if I've just reached the point where my brain, my brain has just too much information in it. Like, I'm going to have to get rid of stuff before I can remember new things, so it can only just, like, stay in the temp memory. Like, it's just like staying in the browser cache of my head, and then every time I leave the studio, it's gone. Or if my brain has somehow decided, if my brain has made a decision somewhere down in the lower levels of my processing center, that phone numbers are no longer a thing that I really need to worry about remembering because of cell phones and address books and technology and science and the future today and so forth. And so therefore, doesn't matter how much time I actively try to remember it, it's like when it gets down to the filing center, they just go, no, and they just shred it.
That was going to be my suggestion. I wonder if this might not be a common problem for people, because I know... I mean, I wonder if it's a problem for people now to memorize a new phone number because we're out of practice. We don't have to know phone numbers anymore.
It's not a thing that we're habituated to doing at this at this point. I mean, I was trying to think about this the other day. I was running through the list of people whose phone numbers I knew by heart. And, you know, that list, I mean, not counting myself, that list is... It's two if you count the number of the house where I grew up, which, by the way, I no longer live there, and also there's no phone number that reaches that place anymore. You know the number of people whose phone numbers I know by heart? One, and it's Sarah. And that's it. And I think it's because for the... I'm not even really sure why that is now that I think about it. I think it's because for a while I had not labeled her phone number in my phone as her. And so I just kept forgetting to like put Sarah or whatever, just to tag it with her name. Or maybe I just forgot to put her name on my cell phone for a long time, so I was always having to like look at the employee sheet and try to figure out like how to call her. She is actually now, and my wife, I guess. But I mean, you know, a phone number's not in my home or that are not tethered to me somehow. Sarah is the only person who actually has a cell phone number that I know. Then there are other numbers that they'll ring occasionally, and sometimes, like, if I don't have the person's name in my phone or whatever, or if it's just, like, or if, like, I'll get a text or something, or sometimes it'll be that thing where somebody texts to your email, and it won't say their name. It'll just be, like, 503, you know, 505, whatever, you know, at vtext.com or whatever, if it's Verizon. It will show up on my email box, and I'll kind of vaguely know the phone number, but I won't really be able to place who it's from. So I think that she, though, is the only person where I can look at a number and I can actually tell who it is. So, all right. It probably is one of those things. It is being evolved out of us or devolved out of us. If you'd like to get a hold of us, though, you can do that via the telephone. It's 503-505-6964. You can also do it via the text if you like. It's up on the website or at the Skype. That is Rick Emerson Show. All one word. That is our Skype name, Rick Emerson Show. And last but certainly not least, you can email if you like. It's Rick@RickEmerson.com. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com, or Dawn Taylor can be emailed. It's Dawn at RickEmerson.com, D-A-W-N at RickEmerson.com. And then there was this whole weirdness yesterday where I had to explain the whole show pony thing to Eric. And then it just sounds really weird coming from me, because then it sounds like, when I describe it, it sounds like some sort of either demeaning and or sexual name that I somehow gave you, that I just assigned to you, you know, out of my cruel taskmasters, you know, the heart, and which is not the case. But
from now on, we will just call you Show Pony.
Right. You know, that's, you know, it's like, or like in like during the off hours when we're not doing the show, like I just have you walking around the studio wearing a bridle or something, which I'm not, by the way. That's just a thing I'm saying now, just as like a gag, as a goof. That's not really the case. In any event, it's 503-505-6964. You can email if you like. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com or Dawn, D-A-W-N, at RickEmerson.com. Coming up today, we got your Snuffwatch, Clownwatch, and a top five from December 8th, 1973 would really be something, but 1973, that is on the way later on the day. Plus, Dawn Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Thursday.
Police find a car chase suspect hiding in a tree. Some fellows help a guy whose van flips over. And women in Columbus, Ohio are warned about wearing dresses when they walk up the county courthouse's new glass staircase.
Fantastic. Excellent. Wonderful. By the way, you were asking about Katy Perry last hour and whether she's actually talented. I don't have the answer to that question, but I will tell you, her new video features what's-her-name, Rebecca Black, the Friday chick.
Oh.
Because the song is called something like Remember What We Did Last Friday. And so now, here's the thing, Rebecca Black, for the rest of her life, I mean, even if she wasn't going to make enough money, you know, to like retire just on the Friday song, which who knows, like she might at this point, but she can spend the rest of her life just licensing that song to like TGI Fridays, you know, or just like any sort of like, you know, that... There was that whole Friday show that was on ABC. Doesn't matter. Anything that has Friday in the name, any business that is even tangentially related to that day of the week, she's going to be able to get her license on with that. So that is, by the way, somebody just said, I don't even know what this means. Somebody says, I just want Dawn to be my chocolate-making pony.
Oh, that's because I haven't shipped the chocolate yet that people are owed. And part of that is in part. We had some unseasonably warm temperatures. And then combined with the fact that I just moved.
Okay.
So
it's not like he's...
Chocolate is imminent, sir.
Not asking you to make some sort of scatological porn for him.
I hope not.
Okay, just checking. I mean, one can never tell with these,
things.
All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We want to thank Mr. Eric D. Snyder for joining us yesterday, for filling in for the absent Dawn Taylor. We'll find out more about your absence in a moment. But before we do anything else, I just got to ask, have you heard this thing of Richard Dreyfuss and the Apple Terms of Service Agreement?
No.
Okay, so when you sign up for Apple, and there was a whole South Park about this where it's like, you know, there's a 17, you know, pages of things that you agree to. Hold on, I got to get rid of this speck off the table because it's driving me crazy. All right. But there's this whole end-user license agreement that you sign up for when you go to, which, by the way, as difficult as it is to navigate your way through all the terms of service with Apple, like under the best of circumstances, like on your regular computer, you know where it's even harder to do is on your iPhone, because I was updating an application on my phone the other day, and it was something about how you know, like the App Store terms of service had changed since the last time I installed anything or updated anything. But it was like my, I don't know, like the Napster app or the Netflix app or something had to be updated. But I had to agree to the terms of service before they would give me the updated version of the app. And I swear to you, it comes up on the screen and it's like, so you must read the terms of service. And it's on the iPhone, which means that they got to shrink everything down, but they still can't fit all that much in the page. And it's like page one of 63.
Oh,
I don't know how long it is like on the actual like iTunes application or whatever, but 63. But of course, then they just put the huge button at the bottom that just says, or agree, which is why everybody does that, because there's just no way you're going to wade through that. So, but there was this, you know, there's this whole, you know, section of any legal department at any tech company that just creates those terms of service agreements or the end user licensing agreements. And so CNET actually did this great thing this morning where they actually had Richard Dreyfuss doing a dramatic reading of the iTunes end user license agreement. Let's see if I can just hold on a second. Let's see. This is the So this is the just the openest, the please read. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you one of our greatest actors, Richard Dreyfuss.
Please read this software license agreement carefully before using the Apple software. By using the Apple software, you are agreeing to be bound by the terms of this license. If you do not agree to the terms of this license, do not use the software.
This now, is just making me wish that it was actually Christopher Lee doing it.
Here's the thing, and I don't know whether it just makes me a retard, but I sat this morning and I just laughed like a fool. I laughed like I had some sort of a brain injury this morning at this. Here's another one. This is Richard Dreyfuss reading from the iTunes end user license agreement. This is him talking about your responsibility.
You expressly acknowledge and agree that use of the Apple software as defined above and services as defined below is at your sole risk, and that the entire risk as to satisfactory quality, performance, accuracy, and effort is with you. No oral or written information or advice given by Apple or an Apple-authorized representative shall create a warranty. Should the Apple software or services prove defective, you assume the entire cost of all necessary servicing, repair, or correction. Got it?
Let's see. Here's I think I've got either one or two more. So this is this music, by the way, that Aaron Durant sent. This is wow, it's way too loud, is what it is there. What is this called? This is "Beasts of the Borderlands." This, by the way, is the best music bed we've ever been sent for anything. This is Richard Dreyfuss talking about damages. Again, ladies and gentlemen, one of our greatest thespians, Richard Dreyfuss, doing a dramatic reading from the iTunes end user license agreement.
This Apple software is not intended for use in the operation of nuclear facilities, aircraft navigation or communication systems, or air traffic control systems, or life support machines, or other equipment in which the failure of the Apple software could lead to death, personal injury, or severe physical or environmental damage.
And finally, he's reading the effective until portion.
This license is effective until terminated. Your rights under this license will terminate automatically, without notice from Apple, if you fail to comply with any terms of this license. Upon the termination of this license, you shall cease all use of the Apple software and destroy all copies, full or partial, of the Apple software. Thank you.
Wow.
So there you go. That was how I started my morning,
wow,
by the way. It really is like the best thing I've ever heard. And there's no reason it should be as funny as it is, and yet I just sat there and, I just laughed like an idiot at that. So that is, that put a smile on my face. So I want to thank the many, many people who sent that to me this morning. Thank you. You've made one special boy very, very happy. All right. So there we go. So there's that. Let's see. What else do we have here? Another message to start the day. Somebody says, I gave up smoking and I seem to have picked up PUBG's instead as my replacement vice. Mm. I'm not sure which is worse. I can tell you this. PUBG's tastes like it came from the teats of a heaven cow. I don't even know what the teats of a heaven cow... From the teats of a heaven cow! Whatever that might be. So, there you go. Mm. Hello, Don Taylor. How are you?
I'm excellent.
All right. Are you excellent because you heard Richard Dreyfuss reading the Apple Terms of Service Agreement as though he were Hitler?
That and I'm just giddy from lack of sleep.
Oh, that's right. You haven't gotten any... you haven't rested at all.
Not really, no. No. No, we phase two of our moving... to continue our story, our saga, where my 12-month lease was coming up, and then I had a line on a really good place to move into and didn't want to pay 2 months' rent. Like, you know, I didn't want to pay rent on both places. Like, first and last in the new place and 1 month's rent.
Because they were going to overlap for like a month or
right.
something.
Right. So it was one of those things of like, you know, gave notice and then like talked to the guy and like, okay, I realize you still need to paint, but can we move in now?
Right.
And so that involved us having to move over, like, sort of in two phases. Last week, I'm trying to remember if my being off last week was partly about this, but not entirely. One of the things I did when I took a day off last week was go and rent a storage facility. And so then we moved big furniture and stuff like that into the storage facility. That went great. That was awesome. That was smooth as silk. Rented a truck, moved the big stuff, had a friend help us. It was great. Then came like the, oh crap, we have 36 hours and have to get all the rest of our crap out of our apartment. And you have no idea how much crap you actually have.
Now, why did you
until you have to move it?
No, because but this was last week, so last week would have still been already in June. Why did you have to get out?
Because, well, we... It was
so quickly.
Because we just gave notice and we had, like... And they gave us a few extra days. But
oh,
then
I see.
We
so you're not staying through June.
No.
You were not
no,
paying
no,
your
no.
June rent.
No.
Okay.
No, because we were giving, like, first and last to
I
the new
see.
Guy.
Okay. So you didn't want to have to pay rent at
right.
the new place. And they said, okay, but then you got to get out. And so you
yeah.
had, like, a day and a half to get all your crap out.
Pretty much,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
So, yeah. So we were packing up the last of the stuff and then just going through and just doing things like going... Okay, yeah, the little shelves from IKEA in the hall that my Living Dead dolls
leave
are
them.
On, leave them. This, that, you know, we don't need, like, five rectangular Pyrex baking dishes. Take two.
And so are you just leaving the other stuff there as, like, a door prize for whoever moves
pretty
in?
Pretty much, yeah. In fact, I think I actually even left a $20 bill on the counter that,
sorry.
That I found while I was packing, and then I forgot to, like, stick in my pocket. I mean, just stuff like that. So... But yeah, it was the thing of like packing things and putting and writing on them and doing everything neatly and doing that all day and also meeting the landlord and signing the lease and getting that done. And then finally, you know, at like midnight last night, just kind of, you know, throwing the last bunch of stuff into boxes going, I don't care. Put the Godzilla in with the cleaning supplies. I don't care anymore. You know, and so.
The great thing about moving like that, though, is that it does force you to triage. Like, what you need, what you'd like to have, what you just want, and what is completely useless.
Yeah, it's like Patrick heading towards the door with, like, a half a bottle of laundry soap and me going, we can buy more!
It's like, don't you feel like you're on the field, at, like, you're on the battlefield at Okinawa? He's gone! Leave him behind! You know, it's, you know, it's... Or, you know, it's like you're the guy in the intake at the emergency room going, he can wait! He's a shotgun wound! He goes in now!
Yes.
It's too late for him!
It was exactly like that. Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, so we actually literally signed the lease and gave the guy the money yesterday. And then at, like, 9 o'clock last night, brought our bed in. And we're, like sleeping on the mattress
in the
box spring on the floor. Yeah, the cat is completely freaked out because the cat... Like, we realized we don't have a cat carrier at the last minute. I don't remember why we don't have a cat carrier. I think we loaned it to someone and didn't get it back. And so it's one of those things that we rarely need one. So you can usually go to the vet and get, like, the little cardboard one. But we didn't even think about that. So I was just like, put the cat in a box.
And awesome.
We had one cardboard box left. And Patrick put the cat in the box and taped it shut. And I'm like going, don't tape it. He's like, she can breathe.
Yeah.
And put it like on the front seat. And the cat's like going,
wah! And the cat is, you know, just like, what? This is not okay. I am not fine
right.
with this.
And it's sort of, I think it must be a little bit like, you know, being abducted by aliens or something. Because we picked her up in her apartment. after she spent the entire day watching everything disappear.
Right.
Stuck her in a box. Bumpity, 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 dark, 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 bumpity, bumpity, bumpity for like 20 minutes. Then open the box, she gets out, and she recognizes, you know, the chair, the bed. These things smell the same, but everything else is wrong.
Some bright, dazzlingly new space.
Yeah, so when I left this morning, she was just like hiding under a pillow. You know, and meanwhile, the dog is just going, new place, great.
That's great. Look
this
at all
is this awesome.
New stuff that I own here. Let me whiz on it.
Hey, there's a backyard. I can poop in peace. I don't have to be on a leash. This is great, you know.
Excellent.
So, and then met my downstairs neighbor, who is a fellow who owns a food cart. And he's an incredibly handsome man. Just a dazzlingly handsome man, which is something I don't say very often. But, I mean, handsome.
What celebrity would you say he most resembles?
I really don't know. He's handsome in, like, a slightly... I think if you took, like a not quite as old as he is now, George Clooney.
Right.
And, like, sort of jammed him into an atom smasher with Greg Nibbler.
Okay.
I mean, he's just, you know, I mean, dark curly hair and... you know, blue eyes and just a gorgeous, gorgeous guy. And then I'm talking to him and I realize, but personality-wise, he's the dude.
He's
completely the dude. So he's like, yeah, you know, and we both use the washing machine. That's okay. And I'm a work like.
Were you
kind
of wishing
dad.
He hadn't spoken?
No, because I don't care because he's my downstairs neighbor. So I don't really care what his personality is actually like. And he seems like a really, really nice guy. But it's one of those weird things, and you and I have talked about this, when you're talking to someone who is just dazzlingly good looking, and even if you're not sexually attracted to them, there's this part of your brain that just keeps going, wow.
I cannot get over how awesome looking you are.
You are good looking.
You're amazing.
Damn.
This brings up something. So you never did, so this means you'll never seal the deal with the guy at the last place, though.
I haven't seen him for a while, so I don't know. Maybe he left or something.
Mr. like hiking REI outdoor with his kids.
Mr. Handsome Dad.
Yeah, LL Bean guy. So well, although I mean, I guess I don't know how far away you move, but I mean this. I mean, there's
I could
old,
just go back and cruise the apartment complex.
I was going to say it's not quite the 50-mile rule, but still, I mean, it's it's not like in your immediate perimeter. So I mean, you wouldn't have to worry about tongues a wagging, and if they did, you don't live there anymore. What do you care? You know what I mean? So,
but I am now once again a resident of the fine city of Portland.
So you're actually living in Portland proper now.
I am actually living within the city of Portland.
Feels good to say you're in Portland, doesn't it?
It does, and particularly since I'm renting and I'm no longer a homeowner, so I don't have to like be enraged by you know like all the levies that pass to that I have to pay for people's kids' schools.
That's the thing about living in the suburbs. You live in the suburbs and it's like you find yourself paying for it's not just paying for things you don't use, it's paying for an entire lifestyle that you don't have and will probably never have.
Well, in Tualatin it really wasn't that bad. It was like when I owned the house in Portland before we moved to Tualatin, that was when they passed the first like $300 tax levy to try and buffer up the school. You know, the school system after giving like millions of dollars to Ben Canada for failing. And I just remember just being so just angry about that and just feeling like, damn you and your stupid kids and your bad school system. And you pay it like millions of dollars to a guy for being a lousy administrator when you fire him. And I hate you, Portland. And then, you know, and now we just apparently Portland just they just passed another one.
Yeah.
And so, you know, but the thing is now. Granted, that will affect me trickle-down theory-wise, that, you know, my landlord will have to pay this, and therefore it will probably affect me at some point. But I don't have to be, like, directly enraged.
No, they're not going to bill you directly for it. So that's it. I mean, it's a step forward. So how about, are you closer to the studio? I mean, I have no idea where the new place is.
I'm in the sort of Barber Taylor's Ferry area. It's kind of like... I would like to say I'm living in Multnomah Village, but I'm actually on the other side of the freeway.
So, like, how long did it take you to drive here today?
Like 10 minutes.
Oh, see, there you go.
It's
see,
easy.
You can't...
No, yeah, I just pop right on the freeway like a Taylor's Ferry, and it's just like, boom, I'm there.
No, see, that's, and seriously, that makes all the difference in the world. Like, if you don't, like, if you forget something, or it's like if you just have to come in unexpectedly, or if you got to come back, if you got to, you know, be here and then leave and then come back again, it's like Tim, you know, Tim Riley, you know, he lives in the Tannisbourne, which is just like a million miles away, like, from anything. I don't even, I think I've been to Tim's place
Well, I was there
twice.
For, I was there
for the Christmas
thing
party.
And yeah, and it's
like you keep driving. Going, I must have missed
away.
It by now. I must have missed it. It must be. And then I check my GPS. It's like you have another 14 miles to go. And you are convinced that you somehow have driven past the on ramp or the off ramp because it's just you're driving and driving and driving. And he would actually sometimes have to do these weird things where he would come in, like, especially, God damn it, like KUFO. Like, they would always really handily schedule staff meetings at, like, 2 in the afternoon. And so it's like he would have to come in at 3:30 in the morning to get ready for the KUFO show. And then he would leave, because he didn't want to hang around in Portland for 5 hours. So he'd have to do the KUFO thing, drive all the way back, then drive back into Portland, then drive all the way back to Tannisport. And it's like, my friend Jeff, who works at, I think he still works at Entercom, he's a promotions director there, and I went to his house one time to play poker, and we were talking to somebody from Vancouver about this, I forget who it was, but where you're just, like, you're convinced that you're no longer even in the state of Washington, that, like, you have crossed over, like, you are somehow in Calgary, yeah. And you're just, and you had no idea that, like, that the city even went that far.
Yeah, because you go across the bridge, and it's like, oh, I'm going to go to Vancouver, and then you keep driving, and you keep driving, and... Where the hell is it?
And you feel like you're in one of those Stephen Hawking things where they talk about how you could never get to the end of the universe because as you get to the end of the universe will continue to unfold and expand and you'll find yourself back at the beginning or at some random point.
Well, that was a thing that one of those exercises when I took a philosophy class in college that, like, you know, if you walk from here to the door, at some point you will be halfway to the door. And then between there and the door, you will at one point be halfway to the door. And so by that logic, you will never actually reach the door because you will always only never get any closer than like halfway to the door.
That is called Zeno's paradox, is what that is. That is, yes, if you are continually halving the distance between yourself and any target point, you will never actually arrive at your destination.
Yeah, that's why I stopped going to my philosophy class. They kept telling me stuff like that, and I would go... That makes perfect sense.
And then
it just made my brain hurt.
Then you just go home and just sit in a corner and shudder.
Yeah, I take things way too literally. So things like that, I just go, I believe that to be true.
No, don't even get me started. No. It's like the thing that always weirded me out was the whole business of the outside edge of a phonograph, you know, of a record, a 33 RPM record. The outside edge and the inside edge arriving at the same place at the same time when they're going the same speed, even though one only has to travel like a quarter of the distance of the other.
Yeah.
I mean, how does that even work? It's like that whole thing of how, like, the Earth turns slower if you're at the pole, which I'm assuming is true because, like, smart people tell me it's true. But that doesn't make any sense that the top of the Earth, like, if you're at the North Pole, is rotating slower than the rest of it because you think it's all connected. And let me urge everyone now, don't, like, try to, it doesn't, I'm never going to get it. I mean, I believe it, but it's like if the Earth is all connected, which it is, I mean, not just plates and whatever, but I mean, if the Earth is all one big mass, how can part of it be spinning slower than the rest? It doesn't make any sense. And yet it is. And so they just tell me that, and that is the thing. That is, like, as much as I'm, you know, sort of an agnostic about everything, that is the secular faith where you just say, I guess, you know, or like when they tell you, like, how, like when Bill Bryson talks about what an atom looks like.
Yeah.
And he talks about how the traditional representation of the atom, where it's, you know, the sort of atomic symbol like we have in the logo for the show and the whatever. And he says that actually bears, like, no relation in any way to what an atom looks like. In no world is that even remotely accurate. That's like a thing that, like, some French guy, like a French artist came up with at some point for an exhibition about nuclear energy. And that we just all just gravitated to and we just grabbed that. And that's what we've all decided on. But he's like, that in no way. He said if you were to describe an atom as looking like anything, he said... If you had to describe what an atom actually looked like if it was big enough that you could see it, he said, I suppose you would describe it as being a bit like a fuzzy, out-of-focus tennis ball. And he said, but even that is inaccurate. He said, because an atom doesn't look like anything you can imagine. It doesn't look like anything you can imagine. It doesn't look like anything that we see here in the regular-sized world. It doesn't look like anything your brain can conceive. And then he adds one of those things at the end. He says... And he said, the reason you can't actually ever describe what an atom looks like is because, for example, with the protons spinning around it, he said, the protons really aren't spinning around it. The protons are actually everywhere and nowhere simultaneously.
God.
And then he just, you know, chapter 5. And then he just goes, no, go back. Oh, crap. You just don't understand anything. So,
I do want to say the other thing about moving into the place, by the way, before we moved on to something else, I talked to the new guy, the downstairs neighbor, which I'll have to either, you know, mention him by name at some point or give him some kind of a wacky radio name. I guess I could just call him downstairs neighbor guy or something.
Yes.
I have no idea. But, and I said, you know, and I have a dog. If the dog, you know, she, she's going to be acclimated to the new place. So if she gets a little barky, I apologize. She's like, I love dogs. And, you know, I'm at work all the time. I'm hardly here anyway. It's great. You know, it's like, fine. I was like, okay, good. But I think one thing he hadn't really taken into consideration, the landlord just ripped out all of the old nasty carpeting and put down brand new Pergo wood flooring. And we were moving all our stuff in. I got the dog unloaded out of the car into the house at 1 o'clock in the morning. And her nails are a little long and need to be clipped. And she was doing the dog thing of just running from room to room. So she's just going clickety clickety clickety.
Seeing big gouges just being put on the.
I don't even think she can really damage the Pergo. The Pergo is pretty much impervious. I've been living with it for 2.5 years in my bathrooms at my apartment here, and nothing can harm that stuff. It really is kind of an amazing miracle thing. It's the fact that this guy, it was 1 o'clock in the morning. And this guy's downstairs,
oh, yeah.
And he's hearing click, 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 tick, 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 tick,
and you are
running
the person upstairs.
And I'm like, Bella, get over here. Get in the bedroom where it's carpeted. Stop that. And I'm thinking, wow.
And he's immediately seeing the rest of his time living underneath you as just being that sound.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, God, I've lived here 10 minutes, and I'm already that guy.
Yeah.
The annoying upstairs neighbor.
I used to know somebody, and it's like above him in his, like, he lived in this apartment complex, and above him was, and the way the place was laid out is that directly above his apartment were, because they weren't directly stacked on top of each other, they were sort of offset, sort of like Jenga cubes. And so he was never really able to figure out who it was, but there was somebody above him, and the only conclusion he could ever come to was that they had sort of a nervous habit or some sort of a thing they did while they were reading or watching TV or whatever of bouncing a golf ball on the linoleum floor.
Jesus.
And it was just a sort of bump. And it was like they would bounce a ball and then they would let it hit several more times and then they would grab it and they would bounce it again. And it would go on for like 5 or 6 hours. And he went up there and he was never able to figure out who it was. And it was the thing, I mean, he lived there for like 2.5 years, and that was the thing that would, sometimes it would be for 10 minutes, sometimes it would be for like 3 hours, sometimes in the middle of the night, and he was never able to figure it out. And everybody just lives in fear of being that guy, especially because if you've ever lived above or next to or beneath anybody who's loud, or if you've been the loud guy, the whole weird thing about that is it's like there's different levels. It's like being brave on the internet, or like if somebody's being real obnoxious, like in the apartment next door, like you could do the thing of like hitting the ceiling with a broom, being quiet up there. But then it's like the next time you leave your apartment and you're seeing anybody else from the apartment building, then you just live in fear that you're going to run into whoever that is. They're going to know who you are, and it's going to be some guy who's like a Hungarian weightlifter, and he's 6'6", and he decides to pull out your spine. So I have always, my whole thing is to try to not even be noticed. Like my, if they don't even know that I'm living there, that makes me happy.
That's my feeling too. And it's like we do need to get the dog's nails professionally cut, which means taking her someplace and probably having them knock her unconscious or tie her up in one of the slings that they have or something, because she,
one of those Hannibal Lecter deals.
She does not want that to happen ever.
Oh God, just once we tried to like,
we had a groomer just tell us that they would never try to, they didn't mind washing her, but they would never try to trim her nails again because she's like a 60-pound dog, and apparently she just jumped straight up in the air and landed on the groomer's back.
Have you ever tried to use the petty paws, the zzzz
no,
thing?
That I cannot see that working.
Laura borrowed one of those from somebody one time and tried it on Philo, which I guess it was early on when we had him, and I mean, we should have known. I mean, now I would realize that was not a thing that was going to work. But it was the same thing. It was like his skeleton basically leapt out of his body. He was so terrified of that thing. So
I wouldn't you be, though, if somebody came at you with that?
Well, they're basically using like a belt sander on your hand.
I'm also wondering, I mean, Bella's like 5 years old now, and you know when dogs get older it's harder to train them to do certain things.
Yes,
but I'm wondering if maybe I could teach her to just like wear socks. Aren't there like little dog socks that you can put on your,
like baby mitts?
Yeah, they're like silicone. Well, I think they're like little silicone bottom shoes that you give dogs so that when they go outside in the snow and stuff they don't, and I could just teach Bella to wear those like all the time in the house.
That's adorable.
So she didn't like make noise.
I had no idea that those even existed. I was just going to tell a dog anecdote, but then we're just going to be people talking about dogs again. But I was just going to say that, you know, Max is a seasoned citizen in dog years. And it's that thing where he has obviously just reached. The great thing about dogs is that they are like people in that as they become older, they just become less, just less willing to do whatever you ask them to do. And they become more inclined just to do whatever they feel like doing regardless. And so be like, leave Philo's food alone. And Max will, it's not that he doesn't hear me. It's like he'll walk over, and because he knows he's not supposed to go I have to feed them in separate rooms because Max is just, he's got like food issues. And he'll just take things away from other dogs. And he's just, Max is a bully is the thing. There's just no getting around it. He is a bully. And he's like incredibly, incredibly alpha for being such a tiny little dog. And so I have to feed them in separate rooms, and I've gotten him to the point where he knows that when he finishes, he has to lay in the kitchen, he has to sit there, and he can't leave the kitchen. Like, as soon as he's done with his meal, which is like 10 seconds after I give it to him, it's like, I give it, and it's like the Tasmanian devil thing where he just kind of, and it's gone. And then he just waits there, and he has to wait in the kitchen until I tell him he can leave. He has to wait, and then once he's, and his reward for staying in the kitchen once he's done is that I will give him a few pieces of Philo's food. But that's if he finishes his meal and stays in the kitchen. But just within like the last month or so, he's just reached this point of like, no, I'm not going to do it. And so like he'll finish and just walk out and just leave the kitchen and walk it and just basically just kick Philo out of the way and just begin eating. And I'll do that thing of like, Max, stop. And he'll do the thing of just stop, like stop eating. And he'll look at me and it is, he doesn't quite do this. But he just, it's that thing is like, if he were able to, he would be arching an eyebrow at me and then just kind of, going, whatever. And then he just goes back to eating. And so, and I think that is the thing that he's just becoming, you know, old enough that he just doesn't care. Yeah, he just has no invested interest in obeying me.
Yeah, Bella is getting gray in the muzzle. And she just figured out about 6 months ago that, you know, there's stuff in the trash cans that's tasty.
Oh, yeah.
And not just in the kitchen trash cans, in the bathroom waste baskets.
Oh, yeah. No, can I just tell you this?
And it's disgusting. And I can't. And now that she's figured that out, I think she just thinks, hey, anything that's at my level is up for grabs. So now she started like snatching things off the coffee table.
Yeah.
She never, ever, ever did that before. But she's just started, all of a sudden it was like, you know, free stuff for me.
Well, and it's always like the worst, and now we are just becoming, but you know, but a lot of people have dogs, so this is relatable.
Yeah.
But it's, and the thing about, and the thing is, like, I was asking Laura about this, and I don't know that you can ever understand what's going on in the mind of a dog. But first of all, it seems to always be right as we are having company over or we're bringing somebody home. Because, of, you know, like when Lars from Michelle was here, and it's like we open the front door and we walk out of the house, and I will just, as you were just noting, it's anything that's at dog level, and anything that's in any kind of trash can, including, you know, hey, you know, a disposable plastic applicator.
Yeah.
I'll just schlep that all over the living room. It's like, why? What is the point of that?
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing, I mean, you know, and the other...
Well, the first time I went into the bathroom and I saw, like, some shredded pieces of, like, toilet paper on the floor and went, what the hell?
Right.
And then kind of then in my brain, like, went step one, step two, step three through, well, what could that have been? Well, where did... Well, it's kind of near the trash can.
Yeah.
Well, what was wrapped in toilet paper? Oh, my God, you're disgusting.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And the, you know, and here's the other thing about dogs that I don't get is I can understand, like, he'll get Max will get paper towels out of the trash if I've been, like, if I eat something, I've learned that I can't do this. If I eat something and then I wipe my hands off with a paper towel and then I crumple it and throw it away, he'll go after that because it tastes like, it smells like food.
Yeah.
You know, pizza. And he's an idiot. He doesn't, you know, paper towels don't exist in nature. He doesn't know what a paper towel is.
Smells like food.
It must be food. Exactly. So there's that. What I don't get, though, I don't get, like, if we just have, like, a roll of, like, toilet tissue or something, like, if somebody has, like, a cold or, you know, it's like, you know, and if we're out of Kleenex or something, it's just, you know, like, you'll just have, like, a roll of tissue sitting on the coffee table or on the bedside table or something, or even, like, a box of Kleenex that doesn't smell like anything. Like, it's not like you've been rubbing it on your face and then you threw it in the trash, or at least it smells like you. It doesn't have food on it. It hasn't even been used. And we'll come home, and he's just shredded it and torn it in little pieces, covering the entire house, like almost on a grid system. Our thing is like,
that's just because.
What is up with that?
I think that's just because it's fun.
See,
because Bella did that to a roll of paper towels one day. It's like you leave the dog alone, and it's like that line that Janine Garofalo had in The Truth About Dogs and Cats. It's like, you know, your dog's home alone all day. What do you think he's doing with that time alone? Thinking, oh, great, I can work on my novel. You know, he's bored. And so you have something like, yeah, like we went through this thing for a long time. We had to keep paper towel rolls up away from Bella's, field of vision because she realized one day when she was home alone that that was a whole lot of fun to just rip that into tiny pieces.
And I just don't understand. Like, that just seems to where the dog is actively being malicious or perhaps gleeful.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem to have any real purpose. And that is a fascinating thing to me, and I think maybe to a lot of people, because there doesn't seem to be any... If you assume that everything that the animals do, including ourselves, is basically for evolutionary purposes, you know, as Richard Dreyfuss would say, the, you know, just swimming and eating and making little sharks, like, that doesn't further any of those things. He's not eating it, can't have sex with it, there's no real reason for it. He's just doing it because it's amusing.
Yeah.
Like how that creepy study they came out with some years ago where they said that, like, you know, sometimes rats just kill because they like it. You know, somebody says, whenever we leave the bathroom door open, our Doberman will just eat the entire roll of toilet paper. He'll just pull it off. He said, pull the roll of toilet paper off and eat the lot. All right. There you go. Excellent. All right. It is the... speaking of Bella, by the way. So I watched the trailer for Breaking Dawn, Part 1. Boy, is that terrible. It just... it looks so bad. I mean, it looks so terrible.
I hate that I feel obligated to see it now because I've seen every single other
one. That's me too. I mean, and it's like... and I'm not even...
because I don't even care.
No. And the last one was dreadful. It took me 3 days of viewing to get through... Eclipse.
I feel like I've just invested time in it now.
You're pot
and
committed.
So if I don't see the end, see it through, then I, yeah.
Well, that's, I mean, yeah. I mean, you put on, I mean, it's because if you don't see it through now, you will have lost all of this time and you won't have anything to show for it because you won't actually be able to talk about having seen, and you won't, and the other thing is you won't be able to criticize it because you won't have seen the entire thing. You're not even 3/4 of the way through is the worst part. I keep forgetting that they're doing that Harry Potter thing if it's like in two sections. So you're like, we're only 3/5 of the way through because it's actually two different, you know, it's like going to be 4 goddamn hours or whatever. The best part about that trailer, though, is how, like, even in the trailer, which is only like 50 seconds long, they find an excuse for Taylor Lautner to rip off his shirt and run through the rain topless.
Well, that's what he does, really. That's kind of his entire character development.
I guess. I got to tell you, though.
He's got a thing for Bella, and he's a werewolf, so he runs around without his shirt on.
And I know it was a press photo, so it was staged. It wasn't like a total, like a candid thing or whatever. But they were talking about the... Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson winning at the MTV Movie Awards or whatever. But they had this photograph of them, like, doing something, like, just gay, you know, just sitting in like, a field of lilies or something, and he was, like, braiding her hair, just some crap. You know, there's, like, some, like, we're so in love photograph. It was, like, they were basically picnicking, but without any picnic crap. It was just them sitting in a... it was, like, them sitting in an open grassy field and, like, whispering sweet nothings to each other. And it was one of those things where... like, you really, they really are two of, like, the best-looking people you've ever seen. I mean, it really, I mean, especially, there is that where you got to go, like, well, you know, that is one of the, I guess that's one of the reasons why they're where they are and I'm, you know, like, here. Because, you know, they look like that and I don't. So, I mean, you know, what are you gonna, and also Taylor Lautner, who apparently, I guess they were going to bounce out of the franchise because they didn't think he was buff enough to play the role of, what's his name, Jacob?
Yeah, so...
and so he went home and, like, roided up over the summer
like the
or something.
Second and, movie or something like that, where the difference between him in, like, movie one and movie two is just, like, massive.
Yeah, because...
he went, oh, I'll show you, he said.
Yeah, and so they, and he claims it was all, like, on the up and up or whatever, which I guess, you know, I guess you could believe that. I mean, if maybe that was, if they were dangling, like, $50 million ahead of you for the rest of the franchise, that's certainly motivation to do whatever it took.
I admit to feeling both titillated and kind of skeezed out by the weird homoerotic werewolf family thing of all of these tan werewolf boys
wrestling were, like, together in the brook.
Yeah, way overly buff who, like, can't wear shirts ever.
Yeah.
And although somebody explained that, because, you know, I made some remark about that thing. Well, they don't ever wear shirts. So, well, they explained that in the book, that werewolves apparently have a higher body temperature, and so it's more comfortable for them to not be wearing shirts. I'm like, really, Stephanie Meyer?
Yeah.
Really?
You know, here's the thing I didn't realize. You know that Twilight was the first... do you know the Twilight was not only the first book, it was actually the first piece of fiction she ever wrote, period.
I believe it.
She had never written, so by her own admission.
I tried reading it. I believe it.
She had never even written a short story.
Oh, I believe it.
And I love it because the Stephen King, as he is wont to do, made another one of his comments the other day about, well, she's really a dreadful writer. Which is sort of great.
Can we make the same case for Dan Brown?
Yeah.
I mean, before Angels and Demons and what have you, had he never written anything either? Because, dear God, everything he writes reads like he's never written anything before.
Yeah, and apparently Stephanie Meyer has an English degree. So,
sure.
You know, there you go.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Well, let's quit talking about Twilight. It's 503-505-6964. Oh, somebody pointed out... I guess maybe I didn't... I don't know why I didn't do this on Monday. Maybe it's because I was waiting until you got back, except you were here Monday, but you were gone Tuesday. I don't know why. Somebody pointed out that I never did the recap of my whole isolation tank...
no, you
floaty
didn't.
...floaty chamber experience. So we'll talk about that in just... We'll get to that here in just a few. But we should actually do some news. Hold on. Where's my news button?
Hold on a second.
All right. Away to the news desk with me.
And now,
From the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
I will put on my special news lip balm first for this.
Fantastic. So oh, Max loves that stuff.
Oh, the honey-scented, or just any lip balm?
Any lip balm. No, if there's lip balm in your purse, he'll find it. He'll dig it out and and he'll dig it out and consume it all. By the way, can I just this is the last thing I'm going to say about my dog. As much of a troublemaker as he is, it's like that time I came home and he had a like a Trader Joe's like paper sack looped around his head, like he had the little sort of wicker handle thing kind of looped around it, and he was dragging it around the house like, I don't know how I got this thing on me. He did the most adorable thing this morning. He had a post-it note on the bottom of his foot and couldn't quite figure out how to get it off. And so he kept taking like three steps, like crinkle, 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 and then he would stop and he would just pick up his paw and look at it and then wave it back and forth like he was trying to shake butter off the end of a knife. And then he would go, eh. And he would just keep walking. And then he would stop again, lift it up, look at it, and go, and just shake it back and forth. And I swear to God, like a retard, I just sat and I watched it for like 10 minutes. And he'd go, baby, come in and watch this. Max is doing the most adorable thing. He's got a post-it note on his foot. And it's like, that's where you realize that dogs just make you. Well, it's like when Kelly Clark's kid was here yesterday. You weren't here for Kelly Clark's baby, which was here, which I do have to say. It's not ugly. That's the thing you pray for, yeah. That the baby is not hideous. Because then you have to go like, oh, what a great, beautiful baby
gotten. That is a baby.
And you don't want to lie, right? Like, you don't want to be,
that
but you will.
That is certainly a baby.
And it's like we all go, oh, it's like when you have to say, like, for some dead relative, well, she looks very peaceful and lifelike. You know, and that's never the case. But, you know, you don't want to have to lie and say the baby is good looking. But, you know, her daughter, Alex, very charming, very, and a gripper, apparently, because Sarah kept screeching because the baby would reach up and, like, grab a hold of one of Sarah's earrings or whatever. But what was my point? Oh, but it was that thing of like, you know, we're all just, you know, big jerky jackasses. But immediately all of us, me, Sarah, Greg, Kelly herself, immediately we're all just babbling and, you know, just like morons here. So in a way, I'm kind of glad you weren't here to see it. Yeah, you know, the babies are they're like black holes for intelligence. They just suck all of your maturity and brain part of your head, and then you're just babbling like a retard. Mm. So the end. Okay. All right, here's Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
Well, this is somewhat breaking news. We actually discussed this, you and I, between the two shows. Republican presidential hopeful Newt Gingrich's campaign manager, senior strategist, and key aides in early delegate selection states all resigned today. A mass exodus that leaves his hopes of winning the Republican nomination in tatters. In response, Gingrich posted a message to his followers on Facebook saying, I am committed to running the substantive, solutions-oriented campaign I set out to run earlier this spring. The campaign begins anew Sunday in Los Angeles. NBC News confirmed that spokesman Rick Tyler, campaign manager Rob Johnson, and strategist Dave Kearney and Sam Dawson have all left Gingrich's team. Tyler told NBC, there is a path to victory, but there was a dispute on what that path to victory was. Tyler was with the former House Speaker for nearly 12 years, and he said, I have no regrets. I admire him deeply. I hope he does become president.
So maybe they thought the path to victory was like working for somebody else.
I think Kearney said the professional team came to the realization that the direction of the campaign they sought and Newt's vision for the campaign were incompatible. So, yeah, I'm not sure, you know, we may or may not find out exactly.
Well, they must have just realized, like, that it's just not going to happen. Like, yeah. I think at a certain point you know kind of early on, unless some freakish sort of chain of events comes together, that just, like, your guy's just not going to win.
Yeah, one of his aides, Scott Riles, also left, and he said he doubted Gingrich's ability to win the nomination. He told the Associated Press, I think the world of him, but at the end of the day, we just could not see a clear path to win, and there was a question of commitment.
Yeah, and also, I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, the thing about Newt Gingrich is, like, he just feels very yesterday. He just feels like, which maybe is the selling point, that, like, remember the glory days of whatever, 1995, when the Republicans were, you know, regaining control of everything or whatever. But he just seems like an outdated idea. He seems like yesterday's news, and that is not. And the Republicans are so trying to reinvent themselves as being young and fresh and the party of tomorrow, and, you know, with, like, and we're young people and we're women and we're minorities and we're whatever. And he's just none of those things. And you know, by the way, I was reading Newt Gingrich's Wikipedia entry the other day, late into the night. And did you know, first of all, that the ringtone on his cell phone is Dancing Queen by ABBA?
I did not know
that.
He's
a huge ABBA fan, apparently. Yeah. Also, he was actually, and I guess not only does he write science fiction novels and spy novels and loves ABBA, but he apparently is just a freak for dinosaurs. He just can't get enough of dinosaurs. He's just a huge, you know, he's just one of those guys, you know, and it is not always, but is I think often a guy thing. to be really into dinosaurs, you know, especially when you're younger. But apparently he's just carried that into his adult life. And at one point, at one point he actually said, Gingrich is known as a dinosaur enthusiast. A New Yorker comment on his 1995 book, To Renew America, noted, charmingly, he has retained his enthusiasm for the extinct giant into middle age. In addition to including breakthroughs in dinosaur research on his list of futuristic wonders, when he was specifying those who might benefit from his education proposals, he noted, this will benefit people who are interested in dinosaurs, which is sort of great.
Yeah,
I mean, that's kind of it's kind of charming and childlike in a way. So there you go. Yes, and he's a fan of ABBA, uses the song Dancing Queen as his cell phone ringtone, says Wikipedia. All right. Well, there you go. So we can go back to just being amusing.
Okay. This is a story we touched on at the very end of Legion of News, but we will revisit it now. Police said a Coralville, Iowa man damaged approximately $2,200 worth of his girlfriend's property after she interfered with one of his relationships. Police responded at 4 a.m. to a property damage report. The victim said her live-in boyfriend, 31-year-old Brent A. Kendall, and we do have a mugshot of him.
Excellent, I'll get that posted.
Damaged her property. The woman told police Kendall was angry because she interfered with his relationship with another woman. Kendall allegedly used a knife to cut up about 25 articles of the woman's clothing and urinated on the woman's bed and computer. He also allegedly emptied the woman's purse into a barbecue grill along with 20 photos and lit it all on fire. He was arrested Tuesday and charged with second-degree criminal mischief for causing more than $1,000 in property damage. That offense is a Class D felony.
And so I'm looking at the mugshot of this guy here, and you'll be able to see this at rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for June 9th. And this is Brett Kendall.
Brett Kendall, an angry-looking man.
The thing about his mugshot is he just kind of has that, well, crap, guess I'm going away for a while. It's like if you look at him, the caption in his head is sort of a, well, my daddy always told me this would happen if I whizzed on things and set people's belongings ablaze, and sure enough, it has. So, all right. Are these? By the way, are all the photographs in here for today?
Yes. Although there is one, it's this woman's mugshot, and it says Martinelli.
Yeah.
And I was looking, and I can't find the story. So for some reason, I found her interesting enough to save her mugshot, and I guess I didn't print out the story was, and I can't for the life of me remember what it is.
Well, I got to post it anyway in case everybody wants to go look at it. So you can see all these things, including Mr. Kendall, at rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for June 9th. That is visual aids for June 9th, and so forth. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here is Don Taylor.
A bizarre scene unfolded inside a discount store in Oceanside, California, Wednesday afternoon when a 66-year-old woman intent on buying things for, quote, poor Mexican women, paid for $5,000 worth of clothing purchased by about 50 different women. The night before, Claudia Smith, who lives in the neighborhood, had walked into the same store, which is called Everything a Deal, on Plaza Drive, and bought $2,200 worth of clothing for a handful of customers. The question is why. At times on Wednesday, she would scream out, I, while standing in the store and yell, you'd better laugh when I'm around.
I'm unclear about why she was doing that.
I don't think anyone is clear on why she was doing
that.
Okay. She is a Caucasian woman, and she loudly proclaimed her love for Mexican women as she bought them all clothing.
Was she just wandering into the store and offering to buy things for any Mexican women that happened to be around?
Apparently so, yes.
Right.
Word of mouth spread on Tuesday night, and at 9:30 a.m. Wednesday, hundreds of women arrived at the store and piled shopping carts several feet high with clothing, believing the woman would purchase it for them. The crowd Wednesday was eventually limited to about 50 people and 25 stuffed carts. A security guard blocked the entrance as more tried to get inside. Many customers, as they left, they stopped to hug her, then would roll their eyes as she dispensed nonsensical advice and used expletives and profanities about men when she was talking to them.
So she's there, she's in the store, women are coming in, she's saying, my brown skinned sisters let me purchase any number of and then with the screaming and the yelling and the crazy. But she wasn't actually committing a crime or being destructive in any way?
Not really, no.
Okay.
No.
Just plain old nuts.
She said she lived for many years in San Felipe, Mexico, and she would advise the women, often using profanities, that they and their daughters should stand up to their husbands and fathers who do not treat Mexican women with respect. The director of loss prevention for the store tried to keep Smith calm throughout the day. He had police check her out to make sure she was mentally competent. Smith said she has been drinking and drugging since she was 15. Those were her words, drinking and drugging. She said she was not under the influence on Wednesday, but admitted she suffered through a 5-month-long alcohol and drug blackout not long ago, and it entertains suicidal thoughts.
This is one of those things where you wonder, like, what caused her to go nuts? And then you sort of think about yourself and you wonder exactly what, you know, what low-key interest or, you know, like, moderate hobby of yours will you latch onto when you finally go bonkers? Like, what will be the thing that it suddenly becomes writ large, like your entire existence?
She apparently also screamed at one woman to get out of the store because the woman wasn't Mexican. She only wanted to buy clothes for Mexican women.
Yes.
So.
Okay. Let's do one more here, and then we'll take a break and come back on the other
side. Let's do our clown watch.
Here's your clown watch for, and also there's a snuff watch, and I have no idea who died. So it's a total mystery to me.
The answer may surprise you.
Excellent. Here's your clown watch for Thursday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
A bank-robbing clown from Pennsylvania wasn't laughing after copping to the caper in front of a judge on Wednesday. She had told bank tellers last August that she had a bomb, and cops later arrived to find that she merely had a silver can rigged to look like a bomb. Carolyn Williams, 44, pleaded guilty to robbing the KNBT Bank in Bethlehem Township, Pennsylvania, last August, while dressed in a polka-dot clown suit, rainbow wig, red nose, and candy cane-colored socks, which you can see.
Looking at this right here, yes.
She made off with more than $7,000 after telling tellers she had a bomb. She said in court, "I did it. I'm very sorry that I did it." She was busted shortly after leaving the bank when cops found her sitting in a car in a nearby parking lot smoking a cigarette. She told officers she had a bomb in the car, which prompted them to evacuate the area and call the bomb squad.
Sorry.
Please cops realized the hoax after a robot found a silver can with rice bags rigged to look like a bomb. They also recovered 2 loaded handguns from her car. In court on Wednesday, she said she hoped the judge would spare her when more details are released during an August sentencing hearing. She didn't elaborate.
Yeah, what details do you suppose could be released that would exonerate her?
No idea. She was dressed as a clown. She said she had a bomb.
And I'm looking at this right here, and here's what makes it unnerving in this. And you can see this at rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for June 9th. It's this. You know what it is that makes it creepy? It's the security camera sort of footage. It's the fact that it's got that weird, like, angled down thing, and then it's sort of grainy. And that clearly some sort of crime is taking place, and that she's strolling through then in clown garb.
In full-on clown.
Yeah, I mean, she's not like a low-budget clown. I mean, she's, like, gone the whole 9 yards.
Yeah, this isn't like the story where they go at a guy in a clown mask.
Yeah, no.
Robbed a thing. No, she's a complete 100% full-on clown.
No, this is it is the confluence of all of these things that actually makes it such a disturbing image. All right. By the way, and so somebody who just guessed this via the text, that is me inadvertently scrolling my trackpad up to the top of the Google page for today, which is, you've seen Google's, like, thing?
No, I never actually look at Google's main page.
You should go to google.com, actually. It's really cool, actually. But it's one of those things that inadvertently makes noise if you're not careful.
It's
celebrating the birthday of Les Paul. And so that is the Google logo is actually a functional guitar that makes noise and that you can actually record audio with to then play back. So how great is that? I mean, it's one of those things that, again, isn't that awesome?
That is.
And it's one of those things that is, again, it's just, you know, it's just there. And, you know, and it's, you know, it'll be gone tomorrow probably. But there was no press release about it. They didn't do like a whole coming on June 9th. There's going to be something awesome on the Google page. They just put it there without fanfare, which is kind of what they do.
Well, they've had a thing that they've been doing for a while where they actually go around to schools, everything from like elementary schools, I think, up into like art schools and tech schools. And they offer students an opportunity to compete and to offer
to create
Google logos.
Yeah. which
and
is,
this may be something that some one of the things that somebody created that they said, that's awesome, we're going to do that.
It's really, and it's great. And the best thing about that Google stuff is that they don't ever really make a big deal of it. They just sort of do it and they kind of put it out there and then it's gone like the next day. Also, it's especially, I mean, it shows you exactly how well entrenched Google is as a brand, because they're like violating rule 101, which is that they're disregarding their own logo, which is the thing you're like never, ever, ever supposed to do. You're never supposed to change or alter or dispatch with your logo. And, you know, they do that routinely because it's like that's how well established they are as a company. So, all right, well, we should do this. We'll come back on the other side. I'll talk about the whole isolation floating tank thing from this weekend. We've got more on the way, including a snuff watch, which apparently may surprise me. And we've got the top five coming up as well. Stay there. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. News Network.
Is it okay if I speak to you today? You've been pissed off for a week now, but nothing I could say could make you look up. Crack up. Is there anything that I can't do? Anything to show you you're a bitch, but I love you anyway. Oh, you can't sing, but you still put me to sleep. Baby,
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Emerson Radio Program. Be sure to join us tomorrow. That is Friday when we'll have Mr. Big Jim Willig in the studio for another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Tomorrow talking about the life, work, legacy, career, etc. of Mr. Jonathan Candy. That's John Candy tomorrow on Humor Me Comedy 101 with Big Jim Willig. It is Thursday. It's 2:36 p.m. Pacific time here at the Emerson News Network studios and wherever you might be. It is whatever time it is, I guess. It's June 9th, 2011. Thank you for joining us. Don Taylor is here. We once again want to thank Mr. Eric D. Snyder for filling in yesterday. For people who found his comedic stylings amusing and want to know more about him, you can do that at film.com or ericdsnyder.com. He can also be heard Fridays, 11 a.m. to noon at Cascadia.fm as part of Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. That is Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. By the way, I haven't seen it yet, but apparently, I guess the trailer for the Trek in the Park Mirror Mirror is up. Now. Oh. And I don't know. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but I've had several people ask me if I've seen it yet, so I think that must have gone online as of this morning. So, all right, let's see. What are we doing here? We're doing... Wait. We're doing this.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A Franklin County, Ohio, come and please judge, is warning women to avoid the new $105 million Franklin County Courthouse's glass staircase. The courthouse that opened on Monday already has court officials discussing whether they need to change the design. Judge Julie Lynch said she usually delivers justice in a dress underneath the robe she wears every day to work. "I wear dresses because that's my personal choice," she said. "When you stand under the stairwell, you can see right up through them." Lynch said she initially thought the new courthouse must have been designed by men. She said, "How can you open a brand new building and not take into consideration half the population?" The news startled attorney Lori Johnson, who's a regular at the courthouse. She said, "Women won't realize this and will just automatically assume that they can take the stairs safely."
I never really thought about that either, actually, because there's a lot of, like, you'll be in buildings or something where they have, like, glass floors or glass, you know, glass ceilings, no pun intended. But they've got, you know, where something is made out of, like, thick glass as opposed to masonry or whatever. And I guess it had never, occurred to me that you could be just getting a straight look right up there.
Yeah, Lynch said, Judge Lynch said she that many people who visit the courthouse are there because of questionable choices already.
By the way, imagine going to court and you end up in front of Judge Lynch. That just seems like bad news.
She said, "We're hoping people will be mature.
Uh-huh.
That's not a solution.
No, it's...
If we had mature people that didn't violate the law, we wouldn't have this building."
You know, that's another thing. We were talking with Anna Griffin was here yesterday, and we were talking about everybody's new best friend, Anthony Weiner, who... It just incidentally, I don't know how they ended up handling it on their show, but I was talking to Greg and Sarah from FunEmploymentRadio.com yesterday, and they had originally planned, they had this whole bit where they were going to be acting out some of the I won't say sexting. I'm just removing that word like altogether from my lexicon. But they were going to be, you know, some of the text messages, the conversations he was having with women, like wherever it was he was having the conversations on Facebook or email, they were going to be acting them out. And that stopped when they got about, I don't know, like half a page in. And I guess I didn't even really, I don't think I was aware of just how, not like I'm offended as such, but I wasn't really aware of how crude, how explicit the conversations actually were. I mean, I thought it was a lot of like, "Here's a bulge in my pants. I'm a naughty boy, aren't I? I'm a naughty representative." And then, you know, and the women would say, "Oh, hey, you shouldn't do that." And he'd say, "Oh, you." And there was a lot of coquettish laughter back and forth. I never thought it was a lot of like my pulsing this and your glistening that and plunging into, you know, I wasn't really aware that it went to that level. Although they did reveal at one point that I guess he was having He was having phone relations with a woman using a line that when you called it back actually said something like, you've reached the House of Representatives. No one's available right now, but, you know, leave a message at the tone. So, like, if she didn't already know with whom she was having said phone encounters, that would have clarified it all. Which, by the way, and then I guess this morning one of the first things he did was to call Bill Clinton and just to go, sorry. Which, because, you know, Clinton must have heard about that from Hillary Clinton. You know, Bill must have heard about that from Hillary, who's traveling with what's-his-name's wife.
Right.
I mean, it's just like one small, like, insane world of just philandering and hilarity. So there's all of that. Which then, by the way, brings to mind that whole business during the Clinton-Lewinsky thing, when Vernon Jordan, who was like one of Washington's power brokers, claimed not to know what phone sex was, and as he put it, had to have Monica Lewinsky sort of recreate and explain the entire thing to him.
You can do that?
Really? Tell me more about how that would happen, young lady. Anyway, where's she right now, Monica Lewinsky? She's not, I mean, she must be living elsewhere. She must be living abroad somewhere.
She went to college.
The London School of Economics.
And then she had some kind of a design business where she was designing handbags
I think she was doing the handbag thing for a while, and but I think that was either before or as she was enrolling in the London School of Economics, where I think she's now graduated and she has a degree from there, which means that maybe she's available for we could be retaining her we could get her to handle something for me. Sorry.
Really?
Yeah, it was just
really?
All right. Sorry. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Well, speaking of which, a Southern California computer repairman suspected of installing spyware on laptops that enabled him to download photographs of women showering and undressing in their homes was arrested Wednesday. Police began investigating when a Fullerton resident complained about suspicious messages appearing on his daughter's computer last year. Trevor Harwell installed software that took control of computer webcams on his client's Mac laptops, according to Fullerton Police Sergeant Andrew Goodrich. He was released later Wednesday after posting $50,000 bond. The software sent fake error messages telling users to fix their internal sensors soon and, quote, try putting your laptop near hot steam for several minutes to clean the sensor.
Take your laptop into the bathroom.
The error message prompted some victims to take their laptops into the bathroom with them when they showered.
Okay.
Goodrich said once he had access, he would photograph the users, usually women. Often the female victims were undressed or changing clothes. Harwell then stored the photos on a remote server and eventually downloaded them onto his own computer.
It's just a whole lot of weird people in this world. I mean, and I don't just mean perverts. I mean, it's one thing to just be a pervert. I mean, I'm not going to say that I can appreciate that, but I can at least understand that. But this goes with the last story. The idea of this guy who's going to what must be termed an awful lot of trouble. Yeah. I mean, really, he's going out of his way to get photographs that probably aren't even nude half the time. I mean, they're not even titillating in the strictest sense or in the traditional sense. And yet, really, it's obviously what waxes his board or whatever. And so that's the thing I don't get.
Well, in the case of that kind of voyeurism, I think it's not dissimilar to people like back in the day of telephones, where guys would make random dirty phone calls to
just
women,
breathe heavily into the phone.
In the case of that, there was, I think, a certain amount of titillation that came from upsetting women. But I think in both cases, it's this illusion of control. It's that you're dominating them in some fashion because they're powerless against what you're doing to them.
I guess it just seems like if you're a guy who, I mean, he's obviously smart. He obviously knows computers. He knows how to operate. I mean, it's not anything I could do even if I wanted to. So he obviously is motivated and intelligent. You figure if you're that motivated and intelligent, you could probably, you could probably motivate your way into like having like an actual woman have relations with you.
But I think that's not the point. The point is that he's peeping at women who don't realize he's doing it. So therefore, he's getting away with something that's extra naughty.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess it is probably all for the good that I don't get that. Like, I don't understand what's going on in that guy's head.
Yeah, it's the fact that it's not a consensual thing that I think is what the turn on is.
Maybe. I think that like most guys probably I think what separates him from most guys is that most guys just go, like, what is the point of that? Like, what is the because at the end of the day, you're just still some tool just spanking it in your computer repair lab, and it's like but this is like the last story with the guy's looking up to the glass floor or whatever, because in Seattle a couple years ago they had to, I guess it was in 2008, they had to pass like a whole down blouse upskirt law, and like that's another thing that I just don't get. Like, I don't understand the whole I mean, sure, cleavage, thumbs up for me, you know, swell, you know, but I just like the idea that like you're going to spend like a lot of time, like I'm going to rig a model airplane with a camera that'll be able to fly over a park and it'll be able to peer down the blouses of women. It's like, really, you could be curing cancer with that.
I think, you know, when we lived in a world where we didn't have constant ready access to photos of boobs and body parts.
That's what I'm saying.
Then peeking up a lady's skirt, I could see, you know, being really exciting. And then I guess on another level, on intellectually, I can understand you've got the phone now, so you're kind of, you go, hey, you know what I could probably do with this. But the thing is, it's like, yeah, I'm baffled as to why it's exciting.
It just seems like you're going out of your way. That's a lot of that is a lot of work for very little return on your investment. You know, you're really, it's a lot of labor for not a whole lot.
It's a lot of work and a lot of putting yourself in a certain amount of danger, taking certain risks to see something that, frankly, you could see a much better picture of if you just opened your laptop.
Yeah, I don't get that. Or, you know, just go to the beach, like on any given day. By the way, speaking of guys who are much cooler than I am, which I guess we weren't, have you seen this photograph of Bill Clinton and Keith Richards?
No.
I'll post it. I'll put it in the visual aids. There's no explanation given for it whatsoever, but the guy who sent it to me, his caption, I think he put it on my Facebook page, too. The caption is just, here's the thing I'm sure happens all the time, and it's just Bill Clinton and Keith Richards, like, coming out of a small room together. And one of them is—and Bill Clinton is clutching a paper bag, smiling, and Keith Richards, of course, is looking, as he always looks, like he's the devil and about to die. So
what's in that bag?
Yeah, seriously, and you're like, what is going on in that room? This is like when we heard that, what's his name, that Clinton was Anthony Weiner's, you know, like, best man or whatever. It's like, you know, the idea of putting—it just seems like you wouldn't allow—the universe wouldn't allow Keith Richards and Bill Clinton to be in the same room at the same time, because then that's—you're just asking for all sorts of things to go amok.
Yeah, and you wouldn't want to be their waitress.
No, I would imagine that's not the case at all.
Speaking of guys who are infinitely cooler than you, by the way, today is Johnny Depp's birthday.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, you weren't even... So did you hear yesterday when I was talking about the Keith Richards audiobook?
Yeah.
The idea...
talked about it the other day when I was here, and then you talked about it again yesterday.
So did you hear my thing yesterday about how he apparently, like, alters his accent over the course of the book?
Yes.
I haven't gotten that far because I actually was like, you know, I was like hitting the things that stopped playing because I didn't want to hear spoilers, you know, or anything about Keith Richards' life. You find out that he dies halfway through or something. But yeah, so that's apparently a thing I have to look forward to, that even without it, you know, just because, just to show us how much better he is at, like, everything than me.
That's such a Johnny Depp thing to do, too. Well, you know, if I am going to be doing this, it does cover the entire breadth of his life. Perhaps I should lower and deepen and huskify my voice as I go along to help get across the passage of time.
Yeah, and so that's, you know, as I, when I flipped ahead, it was like, Chapter 13, When Marlon Becomes My Touring Mate. You know, and I was just like, really? Are you effing kidding me? Fine, whatever. Hey, you haven't seen the new...
He's 48 today.
Johnny Depp?
Johnny Depp is 48 years old.
That doesn't even really seem possible.
No.
I mean, the idea that
he is timeless. He really is.
You know, and I know that when you see a photograph of Johnny... Here's the thing about Johnny Depp, I know that the people think that, you know, it sounds like that I have some sort of man crush on him, and I do. But when you see a photograph of him, the thing about Johnny Depp is those photographs, they look, he's a master of looking like he just happened to be, you know, just happened to be photographed. The shot that is presumably candid, which, you know, probably isn't, you know, it'll just be him sort of just like staring off, you know, like in the distance or whatever, like smoking a cigarette, you know, with his shirt just like rakishly opened, like three or four buttons. And then what I imagine is a very carefully selected series of, like, you know, Indian and indigenous peoples crafted art, you know, just sort of slung around his neck and just looking, you know, like French and fashionable and awesome. But it never looks like he's trying. That's the thing about Johnny Depp, is like with his acting, his accents, his good looks, his like, hey, I'm dating the hottest woman on the planet. Hey, I'm living in France. And hey, I'm also a pirate. Like, it just seems, and I'm not saying that it comes naturally to him, but he just makes it look so easy. That's the thing about that guy. So it's hard to begrudge him. Yeah. You know, I just, one cannot. 48, though. Mm-hmm. All right. By the way, you can see that now. If you go to rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for June 9th, you can see this photograph of Keith Richards and Bill Clinton leaving a room together. And seriously, you got to see this photograph because it looks as though it's Clinton leaving first, and he's got this smile on his face like he always does, of like a hi, you know, I'm just a guy. And he's got this he's got this paper bag in his hand. Keith Richards is exiting behind him, and Richards has got these blackout sunglasses on and just looks so unbelievably old and sinister. And you just wonder what it was he was providing to Bill Clinton in that room. Like, what was being passed from one person to another?
Oh, what is in that bag?
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, so in any event. All right. And then somebody's just saying, here we go again, the Johnny Depp thing. Just have sex with him and be done with it already. Well, from your mouth to God's ear.
No, we would if we could, sir.
I mean, if he was...
If there was a chance in hell, do you think I'd be sitting here?
If only if he would just make himself available. All right. It is 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. And the Skype username for the show is Rick Emerson Show. That is all one word. That is Rick Emerson Show, all one word, via Skype, if you would like to get a hold of us that way. Here is Don Taylor.
Well, let's do that snuff watch.
Here's the snuff watch, which apparently is a surprise and a mystery to all of us. Let's see. Here's the snuff watch for Thursday. Here is Don Taylor with your snuff watch.
As writer, director, and producer, Leonard Stern's career spanned more than four decades. He died of heart failure June 7th at a hospital in Los Angeles. He was 88. Mr. Stern worked as a writer and producer on 23 television shows, including the CBS sitcom The Honeymooners. He won an Emmy as a writer on the military satire The Phil Silvers Show. Mr. Stern was an executive producer and writer on Get Smart in the 1960s. But one of his more enduring contributions to comedy was his co-invention of Mad Libs, in which people fill in blank spaces,
okay,
calling for nouns, adjectives, adverbs, and even body parts to form a zany, sometimes bawdy narrative. In the late 1950s, Mr. Stern's position as a writer for NBC's The Steve Allen Show helped his new game get nationwide exposure. One night, Mr. Stern suggested that Allen play the game on the air by asking the audience for an adjective and a noun to describe comedian Bob Hope. And then Mr. Stern recalled reading, and here's the scintillating Bob Hope, whose theme song is Thanks for the Communist. The audience would laugh uproariously since they were in on the joke. He said it gave us national publicity. Mr. Stern said the Mad Libs titles were aimed at grown-ups, but the series became most popular with children. Today, the books are used to teach basic grammar. He told The Post, we intended the game for adults as an icebreaker at a party, but the kids became possessive of it. Sales increased in the summer when children were in camp and families took car trips. We provided measureless relief. He was born in 1922. And he said he got the idea for Mad Libs when writing a humor column for his high school newspaper, and that he fleshed it out in 1958 with Roger Price, a fellow comedy writer. Years later, he was writing for The Honeymooners when Price stopped in. They told Publishers Weekly that they were I was trying to find the right word to describe the nose of Ralph Kramden's new boss. So I asked Roger for an idea for an adjective. And before I could tell him what he was describing, he threw out clumsy and naked, and we both started laughing. We sat down and wrote a bunch of stories with blanks in them. That night we took them to a cocktail party, and they were a great success.
So that is, I mean, it never, that's one of those things that it never occurred to me that a guy actually created them. You know, Mad Libs are just sort of, you know, you just sort of, you just exist in a world where they have always been around, where they have always existed. And the idea that at one point, that I think about that stuff a lot. I mean, whether it's a, you know, whether it's a song that is culturally important or a movie that you've seen a million times, the idea that one day it didn't exist and the next day it existed, and in the intervening time, somebody had the idea. And so Mad Libs, occasionally I will lament that I was not born in an earlier age, because it seems like at a certain time you could just come up with like the simplest thing, because like nothing had been done.
Yes.
Because like it was like in the year 5, like nobody had ever thought of that. You know, well, what if I just stack one rock on top of another rock? He's a genius. And you're like the smartest guy in the village, because that had never occurred to anybody before. So it is with Mad Libs, which are just, you know, an astonishingly simple and basic invention, but which are fantastic. So, and now that guy's dead. So there you go. You know what you should have done there? You should have done, he died of a lymphoma while at Cedars-Sinai.
Well, the piece I read, I skipped the the first part where the person had written. Letterman was a legendary noun in show business. He had an adjective career that took him to geographic place with celebrity. And I was just like, no, okay. I'm not doing that.
You decided not to. So really the hackery that I encourage is something that you eschewed because you are sophisticated.
Isn't that often the case?
Really is. That is sort of the story of that is the story of the show. All right, there you go. There's your snuff watch for Thursday, Rick Emerson Radio Program. Fantastic. All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Thank you for joining us. So we got the top five coming up here in just a few. We'll do that in just a skosh. It is the top five, and we just randomly picked this yesterday. Didn't get a chance to get to it. We'll do it today. It's the top five from December 8th, 1973. That is December 8th, 1973. Before we do anything else, though, we should talk about Squires Electric. They helped to make this fine radio program possible, including the top five, and including, by the way, not just the actual program itself, it's also all the ancillary items, all of the things that the tangential relations to this program, such as this fantastic photo of Keith Richards and Bill Clinton, which I'm posting on Facebook right now, courtesy of listener Dallas. The best photo ever taken. Ever.
Wow, I just logged onto Facebook and there was a big ad in the corner for Burt's Bees.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, you know, and you get used to seeing these ads that are like targeted at you because of things you talk about on Facebook. And I immediately thought, oh, well, they must be doing this because I'm using the Burt's Bees lip balm right now. And then I realized,
no.
Well, how would it know?
Yeah. No, that is one of those moments where you realize that A, technology has gotten a lot creepier than you anticipated. And also, And I say this.
I didn't mention I was using the Burt's Bees lip balm.
This is for myself as well. That you realize that however much I fancy myself sort of a rogue and like existing on the periphery of society and a man who's not constrained by the rules and by nobody can predict what I do. Everybody can predict what I do. Everybody, including marketers, it's like when you go to Amazon. Sometimes it's like, well, we think you would like the following like nine things.
And you're like, I own all of those.
Exactly. Oh. And then you just. Or have you ever done this? Have you ever gone to a place, and I know this is because they must share information with each other, but it's like you go to a place and you've never purchased anything there, but it's like they've just totally got your number. They're like, these are the things you'd like to buy, and you're like, my God, you're absolutely right, and it's like to a T. And then you just sort of, you know.
On the other hand, Netflix can't do that for me because my husband uses my Netflix thing. So whenever I go onto Netflix, it says, hey, John, here's some things we think you would like. And it's all like, you know, Batman. And anime. And so, and I'm like, no, Netflix, no, I would not like those things.
No, thanks. No, I'll pass. Now, mine is, when I go to Netflix, it's all just a whole lot of things about how, like, the world would be saved if I would just run my car on, like, corn or something. you were listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program, Squires Electric, and we found out more about, or something like that, at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squiresElectric. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. You can find out more about them again by going to squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squiresElectric. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They can help to solve your problems. They can help to upgrade. They can help to install. They can help to repair. Doesn't matter. Whatever problem you are dealing with, if you're going to be renting your apartment out to somebody else, you're going to be selling your house to somebody else, if in fact you have already agreed to purchase someone else's home, and you want to make sure that everything that they're telling you about the house is just as they claim, just as it appears to be, and you want to contact Squires Electric, and they will help to make sure that that is possible. They can actually walk through the entire joint and make sure that everything works, that everything's functional, everything is operational, and if it's not, they can tell you how to get it that way, and they can give you an estimate up front so you know about what it's going to cost to have that taken care of. So, you know, don't just leave that to the chance. Don't just leave it to luck. Don't just leave it to your own undoubtedly overstated ability to figure out how to fix something just by thumbing through a book you got at the library after, like, you know, for like 10 seconds. That is just a disaster and family shame just waiting to happen. So you do the right thing. You contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. Please do tell me you heard it here, by the way. That is here at the Rick Emerson Radio Program, which they help to make possible. They also help to make possible Legion of News. In short, they are responsible for all good things everywhere. And it is SquiresElectric.com. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. Squires Electric Rickemersonradio.com, proud sponsors of this, the Rick Emerson Radio program. In just a few moments here, we'll do the top five for today. That'll be coming up. Before we do anything else, let's have more news from Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Neighbors in Lodi, California, helped save a man who was nearly crushed between his car and a curb while trying to repair his vehicle. Scott Stowers and Daniel Moose said they rushed outside after hearing what sounded like someone screaming for their life at about midnight on Monday. Stowers said he was screaming bloody murder, pretty much. The two men found another man who was trapped underneath his two-door Oldsmobile with his head pinned between the front wheel and the curb. Never seen anything like that, Moose said. It was crazy. He was pinned. Just pinned.
It was crazy.
The two men couldn't push the car off of the victim, but after standing side by side at the front of the car, they were able to lift enough of the weight of the vehicle to allow the trapped man to inch his way out. The victim told his rescuers he had gone underneath his vehicle to try and repair a problem after his car died. When he managed to restart the car, he accidentally left the vehicle in drive. And apparently he had...
came to regret that.
Stowers and Moose said they had to stop the man from crawling underneath his car a second time until they made sure the vehicle was in park. Now, here's one of the things that's great, though. If you if you Google the story, neighbors rescue man pinned by own car, CBS 13 was the website, was the TV station that covered this. There's not only just a little story where you see the guys saying it was crazy, you just pinned, but also they decided it would be interesting to do a reenactment of them rushing to his aid.
Right.
So there's actually a shot in the middle of this story, this news story. And it's in black and white, so of course you know it's a reenactment.
Yes.
Of like an Oldsmobile parked at the curb and these two guys running towards the car in black and white.
Is it like in a grainy slow motion,
yeah,
black and white?
It's not slow motion, but it's kind of grainy black and white. And then it cuts to a shot, the two of them standing in front of the car trying to pick it up. So that you can see exactly what they're talking about in the story.
That's
it's very dramatic.
Excellent.
And
Let's do one more here. We will take a short break, and we'll come back, and we'll do the top five on the other side. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Okay, trying to figure out which of these would be the most delightful. A divorced couple in Stillwater, Oklahoma, is behind bars accused of a strange crime. The pair allegedly tried to fake the man's death to escape arrest warrants, and so he could start a new life as a woman. The couple is now charged with false reporting of a crime. Investigators say the pair lost custody of their children after their underage daughter caught the ex-husband having sex with a blow-up doll. Then late last month, the ex-wife Heather Davis told police she dropped off William Davis at his favorite fishing spot in Lake Carl Blackwell. Hours later, Heather claimed William went missing. When the alleged lakeside disappearance story quickly unraveled, police say Heather came clean. According to court records, she admitted William told her he would give up his parental rights to their children and get a sex change if she assisted him in the faked death. He had some outstanding warrants and there was visitation issues, so the plan was to report him missing so he could get a sex change operation that he could return to the family with a different identity.
Wait a minute. So he was telling this to his wife.
She's the ex-wife, and she admitted that this was their clever plan.
So wait a minute. So the thing about him having sex with a blow-up doll, that's true?
Yeah, both of them lost custody of their children at some point after their underage daughter caught him
having sex with a blow-up doll. It wouldn't seem like that would be enough to lose you custody of your kids.
Nah.
But, you know, what are you going to do?
But then apparently they thought that they could, I guess, get custody back because he had outstanding warrants.
Because he wouldn't be him anymore. He'd be Loretta.
Right.
And then, no, this is my friend Loretta. She lives here now. And then that would actually help to get custody back because the troublesome dad would be gone. Plus, then bill collectors wouldn't be able to find him because they're looking for Larry. And then meanwhile, this is Loretta.
And then I guess he said that he would actually give up his parental rights and stop pushing for visitation and stuff if she helped him out by helping him fake his death so he could go get a sex change and start his life anew.
Did he think there was the sex change that, like, was the thing that you could just get at the mall or something? Or like it was just, you know, like the dental office, they could just tack that on to your whatever, like your gum cleaning?
They are living in Stillwater, Oklahoma.
They don't seem to have thought this all the way through.
No.
It's
No, and then the blow up doll and there's a lot of just bad planning.
There seem to be
there.
some gaps, in their plan.
Those are not the sharpest knives in the drawer.
No, not at all. All right, excellent. Okay, we'll do this. We'll take a brief break. Come back. I'll talk about the whole floaty tank, isolation tank experience, and then we'll do the top five. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program right here at the Emerson News Network. Stay right there.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. Network.
I'm not
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
The Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget to join us tomorrow when our guest will include Mr. Big Jim Willig with another installment of Humor Meet Comedy 101. Tomorrow, talking about the life and legacy of Mr. John Candy. So I don't remember why I didn't talk about this on Monday. I was distracted by a thing, I guess. And then Tuesday you were gone, and then it was our Wednesday you were gone. Wait, you were gone something. You were gone. You were here Tuesday, but gone Wednesday. Anyway, it just slipped out of my mind altogether. So I was talking about this all last week, and then on Saturday I actually went and did it, which is the whole the floating in the isolation tank thing, which I had read about. I think it was TechCrunch or Tech something. It was one of those like tech, like a Wired style blog where a guy had gone. He'd done the whole thing of floating in the sort of hypersalinated tank where it's like, you know, it's all, you know, there's no where it's dark and then there's no sound and it's, you know, to cut off all of your you know, just sort of float there and just like absolute silence and stillness and whatever, which is a thing that I would sort of associate with just being like a bunch of hippie trippy nonsense. But he went and he did it and he said it was just like this sort of amazing kind of experience. And I thought, well, that's, you know, it's at least a place where like people can't come and bother me and like have me add something to my calendar for next week. And so it's worth
and
it
it's
just for that.
It's probably not dangerous in any way. It's not like, well, I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. I went ziplining. I jumped out of an airplane. No, this, you're just climbing into a tank full of water.
You're just taking a bath, but there's like, you know, you're taking a bath, but there's like a ceiling. You know, there's a door and a roof over it.
That sounds nice.
And so I've been planning to do it, and then Lara actually, God bless her, because I was waiting for all the this first round of all the book publicity to be done, because there was the getting the book done and then doing the all the PR for the book for the first few weeks, and then there was doing the signing, and then there was right at the signing was like Wonder Northwest, and then there was like something, and it was just like this endless like march of stuff that I had to get done, and I felt like it was a thing I wanted to put off until I had sort of finished that whole wave of activities. So I could like sort of check out. And then she, God bless her, she actually found a place that was doing like a sort of like a, I don't think it was like an actual like a Groupon per se, but it was sort of a, you know, it was like a deeply discounted, you know, session at one of these places. And so she actually got that for me. She's like, hey, I made an appointment for you at this, you know, this place where they do the isolation tank thing. And I was like, that's fantastic. So I went and I did it this past Saturday. And so before I even said anything else about it, I will say two things. One is I do plan to do it again someplace else, because two, I think that I would enjoy it, but I don't think the place that I went, which I don't want to identify them because I don't want to feel like I'm picking on them, but I will say that it's in Northeast Portland, and so the place I was going to go was in Southeast. So I will just draw that distinction. The place I had originally planned to go and the place that I probably will go is in Southeast Portland. She had gotten me this coupon at a place in Northeast, which is, you know, and it was, the place was just very, very like crystal gazing. I mean, not like the activity itself was, but like the place. It's like I go in and first of all, the chick behind the counter has like, and again, I am judging, but it's like, I mean, to each their own, whatever. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this, but I'm saying this does tell you everything about the place. And again, it's not like I'm saying you can't do this, but this tells you exactly what sort of place it was when I went to do the flotation tank thing on Saturday. Because I guess they don't like to call it an isolation tank, I guess, or a sensory deprivation tank. I think those are terms largely because of maybe altered states with William Hurt, that they found that the thing has gotten a bad rap, or that people feel like it's going to be unsettling or traumatic. So now they just call it a flotation tank. I think that's the new, that in a marketing sense, that is the new term, apparently, that you use. You don't call it a sensory deprivation tank. So I go there, but the chick behind the counter, first of all, she's just wearing like, I don't know, it's not like an actual gunny sack dress, but it is basically that. She's just wearing this sort of like weird, shapeless, formless sort of like potato sack dress. She's got really, really long dreadlocks. She has really just an immense amount of underarm hair. She's on the phone with somebody, and as I walk in, she's saying this, Well, first I'm going to go to the Rainbow Festival, and then after the... And I don't even know what the Rainbow Festival is. I don't know. It could be like a Muppet gathering. I don't know. But she says, first I'm going to go to the Rainbow Festival, and then we're all going to get in his van, and we're going to go to the country fair. And I was like, that's exactly the kind of place this was. Also, and again, this is not the place that that I'm ultimately going to go to. This is the place that my wife, God bless her, she's, you know, best wife ever... But she
may have heard about it at the Rainbow Festival.
She may have heard about it from one of her goddamn hippie friends. Here's the other thing that indicates that this was not maybe the ideal environment for me to be in. First of all, there's a scraggly hippie chick behind the counter. And it's not like I got anything wrong with hippie chicks. They put out. I mean, so you got that going for me. I mean, but it's like, but then there's a sign that says clothing optional beyond this point. And it's like, I don't want to be at a clothing optional place. I mean, because clothing optional just means nudist.
Yeah.
Right? They can't say nudist because then that makes people think it's like they're getting their sex on. It's not, but it's a place for just nudists, but they don't want to say that. So just like they don't
clothing optional means everyone's going to be naked except for you, and you're going to be pressured to be naked too.
You know, lose your hang-ups, man. Get rid of that outdated, you know, don't let society put pants on your brain or whatever. you know, and it's like, and so it's like a hippie girl, you know, and in an isolation tank, they really call a flotation tank. A nudist place, they call clothing optional. And I was like, Jesus, you know, and then it's like a whole thing of like, you know, she couldn't like find my name, the reservation, the whatever. And then it's like, and then I'm signing the thing where it's like, I promise not to sue if I freak out and have like a psychotic break or something while I'm in the tank. And at the bottom, you know, it's like I'm signing my name, my date, my email address. And then and just like a huge, like gay, swirly font, it just says, Namaste.
Oh my God! I was about to say that as a joke.
No, that's exactly the kind of place.
I was waiting for you to get to the end of that thing, and I was going to just say, and it says Namaste.
Of course, it said that.
Oh my
because,
God!
Because you know, henna, clothing optional, so forth, and it was just you know. But it's like the thing is like Lara has already taken the trouble of booking it, and I don't want to look like an ingrate. Plus, she's already paid for it, by which I mean. You know, like I've already paid for it. And I don't mean that like in an I bring home the bacon kind of way. I mean, you know, we are a couple. We have paid.
Right.
And it's like, you know, and as somebody posted on my Facebook, because I was Twittering as I watched, and so like going into the isolation tank. And a guy posted on Facebook, he's like, you know, flotation tanks are just pseudoscience. And I posted back, I said, like, pseudo schmudo, you know, like it's, you know, I paid for it. I'm going to use it. You know, it is either free or already paid for, depending on how you look at it. So I'm you know, I'm not going to judge.
And it's only pseudoscience if. There's something
if I think it's going to heal cancer.
I mean, you know, it's an actual thing. It's a physical, honest-to-God thing
right.
in a place.
It's not like faith healing where the guy's pretending to pull out your intestines, but it's just like sheep gut that he brought in with
him. Kind of a guy putting a pyramid over your abdomen and telling you it's going to make your penis bigger
right.
or something.
Right. I mean, that was my thing. It's like it's no more pseudoscience than like massage or chiropractic. In other words, like, they're doing a thing. They may tell you it's going to do something it doesn't, or you may hope it's going to have a result that it doesn't. But yeah, like they're doing something. Yeah. So, you know, anyway, and it's like, you know, if you can get with like taking a hot bath, you can get with this. It's just, you know, it's just a sort of different stuff. So anyway, I'm like, oh, Christ, fine. And so she's like walking me through the whole thing of, you know, like how to, and also it's in like a giant house, but it's still in a house that clearly over time they have turned into some hippie enclave of like, homeopathic crap, you know, and it's like there's like a little sauna thing and like a little massage thing and like a shiatsu thing, but it all was like obviously a house at one point that they have little by little turned into this like this Winchester mystery house of like hippie you know remedies for things. So I go into the locker room and there's a guy in there and he's like got his towel on and he's obviously just finished and of course I'm immediately suspicious because the guy goes, so are you here for the float? And I'm like, Yes, I am. And he's like, oh, it's awesome. You know, and of course, I'm immediately then thinking he's a plant, that they've just hired the guy to sit there, which is probably not the case. And he seemed relatively normal. And, you know, and so I'm like, you know, I'm like doing the, you know, like I like, you know, and because I'm a square, I undressed in my boxers, of course. And then it's like you got to do the thing. And I understand why they do this, because it's a finite amount of water in these tanks, because it's not very big. It's basically like, I would say, 30% larger than a regular bathtub. In terms of its width and its length, it's like a huge. It's like a huge bathtub. Or if you were like a if you were like a little person in a regular sized bathtub, that's basically what it is.
Do we have some good like hippy dippy music or something like that?
Some hippy music, yes.
I like to cover just what it is that you could possibly be experiencing here from the website of perhaps the place you went, perhaps a different one.
All right, hold on and see. Let's see. All right, hold on. Let's see. How about, what keyword should I put in? How about flute relaxation?
Oh, that sounds good.
All right, hold on. This is, we're just going to do some flute relaxation music to to accompany the description of this. All right, let's see if we can just...
The water salt solution is kept at natural body skin temperature. This removes another subtle yet constant source of stimulation to the nervous system and brain. Most experienced floaters prefer to float in the nude, so that the only thing in contact with the millions of sensitive nerve endings which cover the skin is smooth-feeling skin temperature fluid. During the flotation experience, there's no sense of separation between the body and its surrounding. This provides the most optimal conditions for the body and mind to relax and heal in a stress-free environment. And then in answer to the question, does floating work for everyone? Floating, as with other things, doesn't suit everybody. A successful experience requires an openness and a willingness on your part to let go and see what happens. New floaters may need to float a few times before they feel comfortable and are able to relax completely, both physically and mentally. Depending on your own journey through life, a float might provide an hour of total physical relaxation or a profound healing experience, emotionally and spiritually transforming. Floating can be a wonderful aid to opening doors into your inner world, gradually allowing access to those deeper levels at which real change takes place.
See, and I just want to take a bath where no one can bother me, is the thing. That's really my deal with this. And so that is exactly, I don't know where you were reading that from, I really don't, but I will say, that is exactly the tone of the place where Lara sent me. Because, you know, as we've noticed, she is sort of, you know, she's kind of a secret hippie, or a not-so-secret hippie sometimes. And so that was exactly the kind of place. So then I'm, you know, I'm in my boxers and I'm walking back, and of course there's like, you know, it just makes my skin crawl even thinking. And look, it's not like I'm some guy who's got like all kinds of hang-ups about, you know, like nudity or whatever as such. Like, I'm not a never nude, but, you know, like, I'm just not like a clothing optional place is just not for me.
You're not an often nude.
No. And so there's like a whole like little communal like shower thing or whatever. And again, I know that like the average like gym, that's a thing they have. Like, if you go to like play racquetball or something and then you go and like scrub up afterwards, like there's other dudes in there, but you know, that's not a thing I do either.
Yeah,
so you know, just you know, like high school gym class, you know what, I'll stink till I get home, thanks, I'm fine with that, really. So you know, so I'm like doing the thing of like, I look like I'm cruising basically, because I'm there hanging around just waiting until everybody kind of clears out. So basically I look like I'm just there like in a little leather cap, like waiting to hump some guy. And so, you know, and so I'm just like hanging around, like shifting nervously from foot to foot. And well, I guess I'll just clean my toenails for 10 minutes, you know. And then finally everybody clears out. And like, because the thing is, and I do get why they say this, they want you to shower beforehand because it's not a lot of water, because it's very small and then it's very shallow. And they don't want you to have, like, if you have, like, deodorant or hairspray or whatever, like, they don't want you bringing a bunch of, like, chemicals and, like, body, you know, like, your Axe body spray, like, filling the whatever. So I do the shower, and then I go to the place. And it basically, you know what it looks like? It looks like you are climbing into a giant, like, a giant washing machine, except, like, instead of the place where you put the clothes, the metal door being on top. Imagine if the metal door was, like, angled at you at about 45 degrees, you know? That really is what it's like. It's, in fact, the better way might even be to describe it, rather than saying you're getting into a clothes washer, you know what it looks like? It's like you're getting into the dryer if the door was tilted back about 7 inches. I mean, it's a big, I don't think it's metal, I think it was like a polymer, but it's like a huge fiberglass tank that is roughly the same relative dimensions as a dryer for your clothes, but much bigger. And then there's a door that you get in, sort of like a little space capsule or something. And it is sort of cool, because you open it and you look inside and it's like pitch black and warm in there. It's like, because apparently it's supposed to be 98.6 degrees or whatever, because the deal is, if the water and your body and the air are all the same temperature, then eventually your body can't after a while figure out what's touching what and what isn't,
right?
So, and then there's the whole thing of like, you put in earplugs, A, because it's because I guess they want to be quiet, and also like you don't want your ears filling with salt water apparently. And then you know, and there's like whatever, you take out your glasses, your contacts, and stuff. And so then I'm looking around to make sure that, like, you know, because then I want to because it's like they tell you like you shouldn't be wearing anything. So then I have to wait like another 5 minutes till I'm like sure that nobody's, you know, around, so I can, you know, disrobe because I'm a tool. And so then I get into, and first of all, I have to tell you, I get inside and I you shut the door behind you, and again it's like you're in this giant box that is full of liquid that I would imagine it's about like 9 inches deep, because it's like incredibly salty. I mean, I think they said it's like actually the same density as like the Dead Sea. And I believe it because I sort of, you know, like you got some of like, you know, you can sort of breathe it in and like it's in the air and you can sort of taste it until like it's incredibly salty. And you can't tell how big the thing is inside because it's totally dark. And so you turn around and then you sit down and you lay back in it. And I have to say, like, almost out of the gate, it was completely disorienting because it's dark, pitch black. It's totally silent. And then, you know, and then you lean back and as you float. And initially, when I first leaned back and then I floated, you know, and I was starting to float on top, I actually, it took me a couple of times before I could actually lean back and float without immediately sitting back up. Because when you lean back and you start to float on it, it's like you just get the sense that you are in the middle of nowhere. It is, it's a little freaky at first. I mean, it really was kind of unnerving. And so then finally, after like 5 or 6 minutes, I was able to finally relax and sort of lay back on the actual, you know, actually on the surface of the water or whatever. And it's the strangest sensation because, again, it's like dark, it's silent, and then you're floating, but you're not sinking. And that's another thing it takes a while to get used to because you're used to like, because I'm one of those guys, I don't do too well like in the swimming pools or, you know, I don't go swimming like in the river or whatever because I just sink like a stone. I just can't. I know some people can float. I just can't. So it's bizarre to be in a place where you can float with literally no effort. I think it is the first time in my life that I've ever been able to do the thing that they say like everybody can do when you learn to swim, which is just, you know, just float out onto the water. And it's like I would do that and I would just sink. And then my mother would have to come fish me out. And eventually they quit trying to send me to swimming lessons because I just couldn't swim. This was the first time in my life I have ever floated like I think everybody else just can sort of naturally. And so that was kind of cool. But I will say that this is the point at...
Jesus.
This is the... this is exactly like the one CD they use whenever you get a massage or anything, too. This is like the one music they play. But I will say that this is the point at which I wish that I was someplace else and not at this place. I mean, leaving apart all the whole, like, show your penis to everybody and, you know, like, do you want to go, like, sell clay pipes on a table in Bend or something? This is the place where I do want to go somewhere else. Because, first of all, the place that I was considering going and where I will eventually go... They're smart. This other place that I'm going to go to, they're really smart in that they don't have any of that hippie trippy crap on their website. But they also don't do any like pseudoscience, like it's going to cure anything. They just say like it's a place where you can go and it's silent and it's quiet and it's not bright and you can get away from stress and nobody's going to bother you and you're just going to be in this nice warm water and you're not going to have to any external distractions or noises. Nothing's going to startle you and you'll be totally, you know, isolated and be able to like exhale and not worry about crap for like an hour. And, you know, and it's all...
Philo needs this.
Absolutely. And the other place is also, you know, and it's like the whole thing is they have like the sterile white walls and it looks very much like a place where you go to like get like a massage or to get chiropractic or something. As opposed to this place, which feels exactly like this music sounds. But,
floating suspends the dominance of the detail-oriented left hemisphere of the brain, allowing the right hemisphere to separate freely, giving it access to unusual powers of creativity, imagination, visualization, and problem solving.
And see, I don't know if any of that's true, because the two things that I will say about it is, the three things. One is, I think that might actually have happened at one point, except A, it was my first time, and it took me a while to sort of relax. B,
yeah, they also claim that it stimulates endorphins, so...
Well, I mean... Maybe only because I guess if you get the sense that you are floating in the middle of nothing, which I did get a couple of times at the beginning and then again toward the end. At the end, it wasn't even like a panic, but it was like initially it was panic when I sat down and I felt like I was, you can't see anything and you reach out your arms and you can't touch anything. And you're also floating on the surface. You're not even touching the bottom. And that is a little disorienting. Toward the end, which I'll get to in a second, I can see why they're talking about that. But two things. One is, when you are floating in the water and there's nothing to see and nothing to hear, every single noise that your own body makes becomes, like, incredibly loud. So at a certain point, I'm hearing this, like, boom, 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 and you're, like, hearing your own heartbeat. And it's, like, anytime my arms would move and it would kind of swish the water, like, you would totally hear that. The other thing is that I don't think they had it deep enough because... Or one of my legs is, like, strangely deformed because one of my heels, the heel of my right foot... kept hitting the bottom of the tank. And so then I was like having to focus on lifting my left or my right leg a little bit to not bump. And then it's like that defeats the whole purpose because you can't relax. So I don't know whether it was like I got like a strangely large heel or whether they were just not filling it enough. But like one of my feet kept bumping the
tank.
One
heavy foot.
It must be something like that. So there's that, you know, and then, also, I don't think they had it quite warm enough because there was a little bit of a, after a while, a little bit of a chill. So, but I will say that by the very end, like, because I think I was in there for like an hour, by the very end, I had gotten to the point where I was, it was a little frustrating actually, because right at the end, I was just, I think, at that point where I was able to sort of like relax and actually just like get over the newness and the strangeness of the experience. And I did have that sort of weird, and it wasn't like some mystical experience, but it was literally what they say it is, where it's like you feel as though you are not touching anything, you can't see anything, and you are like in the middle of nowhere at all, and where you are there, you are surrounded just by like a complete and total void, a vacuum. And so it was right at that point, of course, that like the little like ding thing comes on and like the light turns back on or whatever. So I am going to try it somewhere else where I think they know what they're doing. This place just seemed like it was kind of a ghetto sort of flotation tank, because yeah, it seemed like they were just not quite running into the proper specs. The thing of my foot hitting the bottom of the tank was actually the worst of all, because that's the thing where you just completely shatter the whole illusion that you're sort of like in the middle of a void. I can see how it would be really great and really relaxing. This is just not the place to do it. So I'm going to try it again at a place where they have... What I want is a clinical approach to the whole thing. And they were not... This was like the opposite of a clinical approach. It was like a total, like... It was a total, like, crystal gazing, like, period of the heart of the flame, and, like, speak with dead ancestors through a spirit god kind of a thing. And I just don't cotton to that at all.
Well, did you feel any kind of, like, I don't know, the cobwebs cleaned out of your brain or anything like that afterwards?
I have to say, it was actually... Again, it was, I think, like a massage, where if you get to the point of the massage where you're not asleep, but you're not quite awake, it's like you were almost in like a waking dream state, which again sounds kind of gay, but you know what I'm talking about, where it's yeah, where it is just like your brain is just sort of untethered, and you are having like, it's almost like daydreaming, but where your brain is thinking, because this is like, Lara does this sort of, she does this, she does like Zen Buddhist meditation, which is like, she herself has said that like, I could, there's no way that I would ever be able to do that, but their whole thing is like just to focus on nothing, and if you find yourself focusing on something, you just kind of, you know, kind of push it away sort of gently. And the whole point is that your brain is just sort of floating and not grabbing onto something, which is a big problem for me. And I could kind of see at the end of this how, like with like getting a massage that goes, you know, it's done really well. At the end, you would sort of be focusing on nothing at all. Like your brain really would just be sort of like drifting, which is kind of the thing I was hoping for. I think if I could be at a place where they had a more clinical approach to it and where I wasn't so immediately... where my own brain wasn't immediately, like, trying to, like, void the experience by being so skeptical about it. Because, again, it's not like I think I'm going to have some transcendental out-of-body experience, but I do think it could be really, really relaxing.
No, and I think there is something clinical, that something scientific to the whole, you know, you have your conscious, your unconscious, your left and your right sides of the brain. Everything is kind of working with each other, and you're just thinking about stuff, like, and processing all of the stuff all of the time. And I know that the whole flotation tank thing was sort of pioneered by Lilly, who was one of the guys behind LSD experiments.
I did not know that.
And I know, like, over the course of my wild and checkered past, I did LSD on three different occasions. I never liked it. I never enjoyed the experience of being on LSD. But in the two or three days that followed my having been on acid, I had just this amazingly sort of calm, just clarity of thought. My brain just felt like it had just had a good hosing out.
Stephen King described it as having a mental enema.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was. It just felt so clean and uncluttered. It was really amazing. I think it's just the fact of just kind of opening up all of those synapses and letting all of the thoughts flow in a different way than you normally do.
Well, I think that's the thing with a lot of people who do like sort of endorphin-inducing experiences. Like, I think people who skydive or people who, you know, do like extreme sports or like bungee jumping or whatever, they'll do a thing where they get this synaptic overload, this rush, and it forces everything out of your head because you're overwhelmed like that. It's like, oh my God! And it's like this huge adrenaline and everything else is just muscled to the side. And for a couple of days afterward, all of those thoughts have just been kicked to the curb.
Because when you think about how necessary it is for us you know, to sleep
yeah.
for our own mental health. And that's essentially just letting the conscious brain that processes all of the sensory input, let it shut down for a while and let all of the background tapes run for a while on their own, and how we actually need that to stay sane.
And there is no physical need for sleep. It's all mental.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that is exactly it. And toward the end, I did have this moment where, because again, you're floating and it's like everything is around the same temperature, although I think they were not quite monitoring that all that closely. But I did have this sensation of, you know, you're floating on your back inside this tank of like 8 inches of water. But I did have this sensation where I had actually turned, what, I guess 180 degrees. And I felt as though I were floating face down and actually drifting. But again, I was not face down. I was on my back. And of course, there's nowhere to drift because the tank is like, it's made so it's about 6 inches further than you can touch in any direction. But there's no room to drift because you'd hit bump into the wall. But I did feel as though I were drifting and upside down. So there is something to the idea that if you just stop telling your brain, if you stop giving your brain sort of like instrument readings on where you are, it's like flying a plane in the fog. If you don't have any instrument panel, after a while, you have no idea if you're flying upside down or into a mountain or down or up. And I did get that toward the end. So I want to do it someplace where where they are a little more controlled and clinical about it, because I do think it could be kind of awesome. So, in a way, it was almost worth it just for the retarded show material generating aspect of it, though, because it was just so ridiculous. I mean, it was like layers of things I would never do for myself, like some hippie place, and again, the clothing optional thing, you know. And it's a lot of, you know, and there's a lot of like handmade like clay signs throughout the place that just say things like, be, you know, it's impossible for me to take any of that seriously. I will say the one thing I can recommend about this place, which I will not name, I guess, ironically, unreservedly, is that afterward included, they had like a regular traditional, nothing weird about it, regular old tile steam room, which is awesome. Because then you just sit there and you can feel like some great old Jewish guy in New York just having a schvitz. And so I just sat there in the steam room for a while. But then it's like I walk out, and the first thing I see when I walk out is like some hippie couple where it's like they've got like the Black Forest going on down there. And it's like you're looking at that John and Yoko wedding album cover, you know, and you're just like, okay, I'm gonna look over here. Just please don't be so unashamed, you know. And so that's just me. So there you go. The end. All right. Well, we should end everything here. We didn't do the top five, did we?
No, we didn't.
Let's do it till tomorrow, because I got it all ready. But we'll do it tomorrow with Mr. Big Jim Willig. It's a thing on which you'll be able to weigh in. There you go. That'll be tomorrow. Don't forget, after a brief musical interlude, I have to make this go away. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have another exciting installment of Legion of News, the encore edition, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. And, of course, tomorrow, Mr. Big Jim Willie joins us for another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101, talking about Mr. John Candy. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening, and please do continue to spread the word. It is Thursday, June 9th, 2011, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. See you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Be safe. Bye now.